Welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast. In this podcast, we take a reading from Scripture each day. We look at the background material to that passage and also application for us. Once again, welcome to the Illuminated Word Podcast. Our reading comes from 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 15 through 21. Let's backtrack for a minute and think about where we are in the story. Back in chapter 18, Elijah had the showdown with the prophets of Baal. He goes up on Mount Carmel, and they have this mountain of decision where there's two sets of bulls that are being offered. You have the prophets of Baal offering their bull. You have Elijah offering his bull. And the prophets of Baal cry out, and they scream out, and nothing happens. And then fire comes down from heaven and devours the sacrifice that Elijah laid on the altar. The people cry out that the Lord is God. They commit themselves back to the God of Israel. So you would think at this point, Elijah has scored this giant victory, that maybe the nation of Israel is turning back toward God, that this was the turnaround that he had dreamed for. He had been so distraught about the idolatry of his people. And so now this great victory really is squashed. As we turn to chapter 19, we see the reaction of Queen Jezebel. If there was any chance of national repentance, it's gone. Jezebel sends word to Elijah that she's going to kill him, just as he killed the prophets of Baal. And one word from Jezebel sends him on the run. Now, when you think about it, all this victory, all these things God's done with Elijah through the power of his prophet, now the word of this wicked king has Elijah running for his life. So now he's on the run. And he's gone so far, and he's been nourished by angels. He's been in a deep state of depression. He's ready to die. He's suicidal in a lot of ways. And so he goes on to Mount Horeb, which is Mount Sinai, and he goes into a cave, and there's this epiphany of God. An epiphany is just an appearance of God. We have a strong wind that tears the rocks apart, a storm that we really can't imagine. We have earthquakes and fire, but God's not in any of those things. We have this time of, some would call a still small voice, a time of just a quiet. And in this quietness, Elijah comes out of the cave, and God asks Elijah, "Why are you here? What are you doing here, Elijah?" So Elijah goes through this diatribe and explains to God, basically, "Lord, I've been good to you. I've been jealous for you. Lord, I'm the only one left." And so we kind of get this sob song from Elijah about how he's the only guy left standing, and he's been so good to God. And God's response is interesting. It's interesting. So what we're going to look at today is God's response to Elijah there on Mount Horeb. Realize what's just happened. There's this epiphany where you've had the strong wind, the fire, and the earthquake. And now Elijah stands there before the Lord, and the Lord asks Elijah, "Why are you here?" And Elijah gives that kind of self-centered response to God. So we see the grace of God really coming out in this story. God's being so gracious and loving to his prophet. So let's look at verse 15 and the response of the Lord. "And the Lord said to him, 'Go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria, and Jehu, the son of Nimshi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat of Abel-Mahalah, you shall anoint to be prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death, and the one who escapes the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him.' So he departed from there and found Elisha the son of Shaphat, who was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen in front of him, and he was with the 12th. Elijah passed by him and cast his cloak upon him, and he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, 'Let me kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow you.' And he said to him, 'Go back again, for what have I done to you?' And he returned from following him and took the yoke of oxen and sacrificed them and boiled their flesh with the yokes of the oxen, and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he arose and went after Elijah and assisted him." So an interesting story. So let's think of the response, first of all, that God gives to Elijah. Elijah's like, "I'm the only one left. I've been faithful to you, God. You know, what's going on here? Why has this happened?" Then God gives him the answer. God is going to dethrone Ahab and Jezebel. They will be killed, and God will replace them with more righteous people. Even neighboring Assyria will have a king appointed by God that he is going, as God's prophet, to anoint as the new king of Syria. So God is going to intervene in his own good time. It's almost as if Elijah didn't trust in God in some ways, that God would take care of the situation. And God was in control the whole time. God had a plan. And now he's making Elijah privy to this plan. This is what he's going to do. And then he tells him, you're going to anoint your successor. Now, there's all kinds of theories as to why God would tell him this now. Maybe God is looking at Elijah and saying, you didn't trust me, so now we've got to have a successor. I think that's a little bit extreme. But maybe it's getting toward the end of his time as prophet. Maybe as he's getting older, God's got to think of a succession plan. And it could just be there needs to be an apprentice that's going to learn from Elijah the ropes of being a prophet. Then God informs Elijah, there's 7,000 that have not bowed the knee to Baal. We know there's schools of prophets that Obadiah is already protected in the caves there. So we have these people that have not bowed the knee to Baal. They have not kissed the Baal. I find that interesting. Some think there's a connection there when Elisha says, let me go kiss my family. And I think it's a signal to the reader that he is one of the ones that have not kissed the Baal. So he's not bowed the knee to these false images. So Elijah's getting a kind of a wake-up call here from God. God's reminding him, I'm in control. I've got this under control. I've got a plan. You're going to anoint these kings that are going to be successors of these evil people. And there's going to be a successor to you even. And you're going to train this guy and get him ready. So as we turn to the part of the story where Elijah anoints Elisha, you're going to notice a lot of similarity in Jesus and the calling of his disciples. Remember when Jesus would call his disciples, they would drop everything and follow him. Now, Elisha is an interesting character. We don't know much about Shaphat, his father, or Shaphat. There's not much known about him in his history. But we do know Elisha was a man of means. He was wealthy. If he had 12 oxen, he probably was fairly wealthy for that period of time. He was wealthy enough to sacrifice those 12 animals and feed the people in his village. This sacrifice would be a thanks offering. It's the only sacrifice in Israel where people were allowed to eat from the sacrificial victim. So this would be a Thanksgiving offering, a celebration, a very celebratory environment where everyone would come and eat from the meat of the sacrifice. And this was a delicacy. You didn't get meat in the ancient world like we have today. You couldn't go through a drive-thru and just get a hamburger. Getting meat was very rare. They lived on, you know, plant products, and they lived on bread and grain products, but meat was a delicacy for people at this time. So this is a big deal. This guy has a lot of means and wealth. He has a lot of things that would hold a lot of people back from going out and following a prophet of God. Now, if you think about it, Elijah's life has not been easy. Being the assistant of Elijah is going to be tough. So leaving a life of means and wealth to follow this poor prophet. And I think of this cloak, the actual Hebrew here is garment of hair. Is what this cloak is. So I can imagine this is probably not the cleanest cloak of all. It's been around a good bit. But he throws this cloak up on Elisha in this symbolic action of you're going to take on the mantle of being God's prophet. And what's interesting about Elisha's attitude, I really love this part of the story, and I don't think I'm reading too much into it, but he is cutting ties with his past. There'll be no chance of him going back into farming again because he boils the animals as well as the yoke. So he's destroying the whole means of what he did before. There's a story that was told for the longest about Caesar and his war in Britain, that when Caesar crossed the English Channel and came to Britain, it's told, and there's some debate about if this is really true or not. So some people would call bunk on this and say this really didn't happen, but it could just be a legend. But some say that when Caesar got to Great Britain, he had his soldiers come to the cliffs of Dover and look over, and he burned the ships so there was no return to go back to Rome at any time, or at least anytime soon. So they knew they would have to fight their way off that island if they were going to survive. When some way Elisha is saying, there is no turning back. I'm going to follow you, Elisha. And so for 18 years, Elisha will follow Elijah and learn what it means to be a prophet of God. And he himself will be a great prophet of God. So much can be learned from this story as we think about it. First of all, God is in control. God has a plan. Even when things look bleak, he always had a plan, and he was going to execute that plan. And then this idea of Elisha, a man that had wealth and means, but radically decided he was going to follow God's plan for his life, so much so that he was going to see to it that he was not going to go back to the old ways. that he was going to destroy those things of his past that might could lead him back or lead him astray. And he picks the more difficult path. I always think of when I see these coaching changes that happen on the college level or even the high school level, or especially in the game of football, these coaches will have press conference and say, well, I think the Lord has led me to take this job. And typically that job is a huge pay raise. I always find that funny that the Lord leads them to a pay raise. But this would not be a pay raise for Elisha. This is going to be a difficult life for him that he chooses here. So I hope this story has encouraged you a little bit today and strengthened your faith as we go through and study these fascinating people. And we're thinking about this theme of faith amidst the generation of faithlessness, following God when things are not easy. That's exactly what we're seeing in these stories. It's not easy to follow God in a generation and a culture that's totally turned its back on the Lord. And that's exactly what we get with Elijah and Elisha. Well, I hope to see you back tomorrow. Tomorrow, Devin will be driving the podcast, and then we'll have David. You know, Friday, Philip will join me for that podcast. God bless. I hope you have a great week.